Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Welcome to the Backstory Podcast. I'm your host, Colby Kolb. And on this episode, we have an artist, an actress, a super creative, and a fellow Sagittarius, Miss Janelle Monae. Hello, how are you?
I'm amazing. You know, a little tired. It's release week, but I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, no problem. And you're promoting your new album, The Age of Pleasure. And I went to one of your listening parties in DC. And what was interesting is I looked at your trailer and the Lipstick Lover video after I went to your party. So I understood your party and the energy of your party a lot better. And I ask anybody to watch the trailer for your album because you're so creative that and I'm a bit of a creative myself, but I'll often wonder how your mind works because it's like you have a vision or an idea and you try your best to make it happen, like live it out. And that's kind of what I got from the energy of the people at your party.
Oh, thank you. You are right. I try my best to stay honest to just sort of who I am and the space that I'm in. And I'm in a really, 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 really good, present, fun space, you know, a celebratory space, creating great experiences for not just myself, but those around me, creating those safe spaces for us to be free and have a good time. And I think that's probably what you're feeling and what you felt. You know, thanks for showing up. I'm happy you got a chance to see, like I did, just the power of storytelling, you know, through music and how music also just makes people feel. You know, it's been 5 years since I put out an album. Obviously, I was acting and doing a lot of other things that I love. It's just nothing like music, you know? It's nothing like seeing us all sweating, having an amazing time, being fully present.
Yeah. And you had a very, difficult road in this business. Nothing came to you easy. And I just want to go back a little bit. You were born in Kansas City, Missouri,
Kansas City, Kansas. I love Kansas City, Missouri. I love you, but I have to
But it's the cities in two states, right?
Yeah, we share a city.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So you're it's one of the most conservative places in America. So I can imagine what it was like growing up there as just a creative, because you know the one thing about creativity is that most people, we're all creative. But most people just are scared of the creativity in their own mind, right? So they just kind of run away from it. And sometimes you can live in places where people don't like new ideas. And so you seem to be someone who was raised with a lot of energy, a lot of creative energy, a lot of new ideas. And, you know, you parlayed that into music. What was it like just growing up there and entering this industry and just having these dreams of a creative?
You know, I give and I owe everything to Kansas City. Kansas, a lot of people don't know, but there's so many talented people where I'm from. And I was always around the best of the best singers, musicians, actors. Like, I grew up doing exactly what it is that I'm doing right now. And I just have to give so much thanks to my teachers and my mom and dad and everybody who really invested in me. Because I was always in a musical or a talent showcase, you know, after school acting program. Like that was me. And having that experience and my family telling me, like, you can do this, told me that I could do this on a bigger scale. You know, gave me that confidence. Of course, it is definitely a conservative, you know, sort of Bible Belt place, you know, so like, me being Black and young and of the LGBTQIA+ community, you know, being queer, all of that I was told growing up was, you know, it didn't make me feel safe to be there. So my heart always goes out to, you know, the young people who are still there and having to navigate. And I'm not saying everybody is homophobic, but when you grow up in those spaces where they do teach you know, that there's something wrong with you if you are a part of our community. I can only imagine. I mean, it does not make me feel good. It doesn't make me feel proud, you know, when they try to, and I don't want to speak too much into it, but it is Pride Month. So I have to make it known that no matter if I'm from a place that I love, when you try and oppress and further oppress those who are already marginalized, we're always going to have a problem. So those are some things that I want to see changed, and not just in Kansas City, but just around this world. You know, that it's not the only place with those sort of discriminations and evil teachings, for lack of. That's all I can really say. But
so as
I love it as a music place. Yeah.
Yeah. No. And I was going to say, you channeled a lot of your energy into music, and that's kind of where you got your and music, acting, just the arts. And you entered a lot of talent shows when you were young, and you did very well for yourself. And I was recently reading that your mother used to drive you around, and since I met you, you talk about your humble roots and your parents and coming from a working class background, and how your parents supported you and your mom drove you around to talent shows, and people threw rocks at your mom's car because you did so well at a talent show. And then you leave, you get out of high school and you just go to New York City. What was that like? And that decision to say, like, I'm out. And at such a young age to go to the biggest city in the country.
I felt very supportive. I've always wanted to travel, and I'm a big adventurous individual, which is why I love tour, and I cannot wait to be on tour. So I already knew in my heart and my spirit, you know, that there was something more for me out there. You know, as much as, you know, you love your small town and where you grow up, I just had a dream of going to New York. And I got to give a shout out to my teachers who wrote my letters of recommendation. They really invested in me and helped me get to my performing arts school, which was AMDA, the American Musical and Dramatics Academy. That's the school I attended in New York. And yeah, I mean, I had supportive parents, thankfully, even though they were working class, working day and night to make sure that I had food on the table and take care of me. They never, ever told me that I couldn't do what it is that I'm doing right now. Like, they supported me in every way, whether it was buying new outfits for me and my friend. We were in a group together, making driving me back and forth and just really being there in the paint with me. So
was that your first time going to New York, or had you gone to New York prior to that?
That's my first time. I had never really traveled outside of Kansas City. So it was a big culturally, it was super shocking.
For sure.
Like a small little fishbowl to like, wow, you're in the ocean now, you know?
But you were able to connect with other people that were creative and free, because your whole I love your free as a motherfucker. Like, I get it. Like, the America specifically can really just kind of hold you down and contain you, especially when you're different. And so to be free, and I got it from Float, when you put Float out, like, I totally understood it the first time I heard the song, of just elevation above the bullshit and just being free and living your life and not worrying about what people think or not worrying about the boxes that they put you in. For that age, I mean, that's a, you know, 17, 18, and just go from Kansas City, Kansas to New York City. It's got to be culture shock, but it looks like it was exactly what you were looking for in that moment.
Yeah. I that's what I needed. I needed to be around different cultures. I needed to just understand a little bit more about life. And I think that helped inform me as a writer and as a storyteller. And I didn't finish school there. I stayed for like a year. And I decided that I wanted to move to Atlanta, Georgia. And that's where I really got and tapped into Janelle Monae as, you know, an artist. And when I was in school, I was more so training and sort of, you know, I didn't really have my identity as an artist. It was more so seeing cover songs and living vicariously through characters that had already been written and created. So it was a beautiful experience, and I'm so happy I had it.
So you get to Atlanta a year and some change later, which is, again, another cultural, I mean, so much was happening in Atlanta at that time. So you go from New York culture and energy to Atlanta culture and energy. And that's where you really start formulating your music, your musical side. And you were actually just building your base of fans. So talk a little bit about just the beginning parts of that process of just like finding people that can believe in you and selling the music outside of your out of the trunk of your Mitsubishi. Uh-huh. As you rode around, as your green Mitsubishi, yeah, as you rode, yeah, around Atlanta.
The green Mitsubishi. Yeah, I sold my CDs out of my trunk. I just think about that. For $5, I live in a boarding house with six other girls on the AUC campus. Shout out to the HBCUs in Atlanta. I enjoyed it though. You know, it was a great place to test out music. It was a great, and I would sit on the library steps and play guitar and just sing and, you know, have people walk past me, not pay me any attention. Some people would crowd around. And then when my CD came out, I was pretty like popular around campus. Like that was my little market.
Yeah. You know, I went to college with Jill Scott, and I remember Jill Scott, the college student, and just her singing everywhere, like kind of what you were just saying, like, and, mm-hmm, and then all of a sudden, you know, she becomes a star. But I remember those days. But it's so raw and so interesting and so revealing to be an artist going through that process. And what I loved about you and your story is you are were always just like everybody else, like everybody else that were in your circle. You worked at Office Depot. So you had like a job, and you probably hated the job, but you did the job because you had to pay your bills.
Oh, yeah.
And then you end up losing your job because you were using the resources of your job to connect with your fans. Talk a little bit about that moment and how that actually bad thing turned into a good thing for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I was working at Office Depot, sweeping, putting up ink cartridges. And at that same time, I was on the circuit, the indie circuit here in Atlanta, Georgia, you know, trying to get people to know more and more about my music. And at that time, I had just a small group of like fans. I probably had like 10 fans. I don't know. And they would write me. And I loved that, though. I loved that just one-on-one personal connection. So they would write me through my website. And Office Depot had these display laptops, and I didn't own one. And so I would just go, you know, if the store was slow, and I would just go in and I would log on to my email and check and try to respond back to as many of my fans as possible. And so I did that one too many times, because employees are not supposed to use the display laptops. You're not supposed to do that. And they saw it, and on the intercom, they were like, Janelle, please come to the back. So I had to go back to the break room, to the office. And they fired me. But the thing is, they knew I didn't want to be there. You know, they knew that, and not that I didn't value the job. They knew that my heart was in music. They were giving me a really wonderful opportunity to show up for myself and to grind harder for myself. No excuses like, oh, I have to be up at work. It's like, no, get in the studio, stay there until you finish your project, put in the work, put in the hours to be the artist that you want to be.
Well, there are people watching this right now that are dreamers, and we're all dreamers, but we got to pay our bills, and we got to feed our family, and we got to kind of make it to that point where we can just do our art. So you just telling that story right now is really inspiring to folks, because there's some people that are like, I hate this job. And sometimes you go into a job and, you know, like, I can look at somebody and say, you hate it here. And it's just like oozes out of them as they do whatever they have to do there. But it's just part of the grind, right? And so out of that moment was when you created a song, right?
Yeah, Letting Go. I wrote that about getting fired. You know, that was my first sort of nationally released song. Yeah.
Yeah.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
So you work to behind the scenes in Atlanta, and you're doing a whole bunch of stuff, and you even got the attention of Big Boi from Outkast, and you were able to be on a couple of their songs. And then Big Boy tells Diddy about you. And so at that point, Diddy goes to your MySpace page. This is how long ago this was. And he sees you and he feels a connection. And talk a little bit about just Diddy, Bad Boy, because Bad Boy was a whole different energy. And you weren't unlike any artist that he had ever had on this label before. What was that moment like for you to just connect with somebody like that?
Yeah, it was an incredible time. You know, we were already on the indie circuit, again, pressing up CDs in the basement, selling them out the car. I had a pretty good following here in Atlanta. And yes, MySpace, I loved how they would allow you to put your music up there. And it was like the first space that you could talk to your fans directly.
Yeah.
And so he actually saw my profile and everything on MySpace. And then he reached out to Big Boy.
Got it.
But he discovered me, honestly, on MySpace, which was really very, interesting and cool. And, you know, he flew down here. He came to the album release party because we were releasing music independently. And I was like, if you're serious, come to the release party. You got to see me perform. I want you to know, if you want to be in business with me. Because I also have my own recording label, and a lot of people don't mention that, but I've had my label since I've come into the industry. I was always signed to myself, and then we partnered with Bad Boy Atlantic. And so that was very important for me because I need to feel protected. I need to have my team, you know, help me stay business-wise on message with what it is that I want to say and what I want to do, and you know, making sure that that's very clear whoever we partner with. So it was important that he saw that I was Black, talking about science fiction, otherworldly. So he came down and came to the release party. He got it. You know, he came to my studio and I'll never forget, he literally got on his knees and was like, listen, I don't want to mess up anything that you guys are doing creatively. What I saw, I just want the rest of the world to see. And he has been a man of his word, you know, ever since. Whenever I need him, he's there. And I think I caught him in a good spot where he was, you know, he's done a lot of incredible, Jodeci and Biggie. And he's put out a lot of incredible artists, you know, Mary J. Blige. I was singing her songs at the talent show. So it made sense. But I mean, I also think that, you know, folks probably looked at Puff as a control freak and very passionate. And if you were a fan of me, you probably were afraid that, okay, what's going to happen to who you are and your image?
Yeah.
If you are in business with someone like that, who's passionate, you know, and regardless, people just believe stories, even if they're true or not, about the way that he conducts business. But the side of Puff that I know has been very what do you need? I'm here for you. No interest in changing who I am. He knows he wouldn't be able to do that anyway, but I always got support from him.
Well, it's interesting you brought up your party because I remember your first or second album with him that I was invited to Atlanta to come to an album release party for you and I and Wonderland, and just the experience of being in that environment to listen to an album, which makes all the sense about the album that's currently out or coming out, and that energy and just dancing and freedom and no judgment and having a good time. I really want to credit you because you talked a little bit about this project is coming after the pandemic. And so during the pandemic, you used to have parties and where you would bring a lot of folks together and you would play your music. And so talk a little bit about this album and that environment coming past the pandemic and the purposing of the music, new music, creation of music, and these events that you are doing with people and how that plays into what the music you release.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be in this age of pleasure. You know, my album is titled The Age of Pleasure. And I'm so happy to finally be sharing with the world what I got to experience. You know, my friends at the time could not find a venue to host their everyday people parties. And these are global parties with the most beautiful brown and Black people all around the world. And so we ended up hosting them at Wonderland, a small party one night. And it was everyone. I mean, everybody was just so diverse, beautiful, Black, brown, from Ghana to Nigeria to South Africa. to Jamaica, the Caribbean, New York, L.A., Atlanta. Like, I just saw so much of the diaspora, you know, Pan-African, all of us together sweating in a safe space. Because to experience pleasure and to be in this age of pleasure, you can't experience that without feeling safe, safe from police, safe from judgment. And so just being able to see that, I knew right then and there, I said, whatever, my next project has to be for these people. We need this space. We need this level of freedom. We need this level of fun. And so I, in the words of Maurice White, you know, he says on All About Love, if there ain't no beauty, make some beauty. And this was my attempt at making beauty for beautiful friends with beautiful friends.
Well, in the Lipstick Lover video, I feel like it wasn't a normal music video. I feel like they just filmed everybody, and yeah, you were performing your song, but like, even it looked like it, and again, this is just my vision of what happened, right? I feel like you started like 12 hours prior, and then there was even this scene where you were having where you were making breakfast and everybody was in the kitchen dancing, and the energy, like, it just felt like it was just like, let's just roll the camera and this is the party that we're having.
Yeah, I'm happy that came across. I co-directed that video as well with Alan Ferguson, so we both were adamant about making sure that it felt as real and you know, went through the different stages of pleasure, you know. Yeah, a lot of everything you saw in the video sort of mirrored the culture, you know, that is ready for this age of pleasure.
Yeah. And I can tell that you really like, what a great environment to test music out. Like, as if it could pop in that environment, then
yeah,
you know, you got something. And it reminds me of Donna Summer, Love to Love You Baby was a song that came out and nobody really connected with it the first time it came out. And it was at a party where the owner of the label kept playing the song because it was a 3-minute song. And he recognized, like, wait a minute. Okay. And then he went back in the studio and he saw the reaction to the song. And then, of course, that launched her career. But an event can be a very dramatic place to.
Yeah.
To react to art.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I definitely did my own testing because I wanted my friends and me to love these songs at parties, you know, when we're celebrating, when we're not thinking, what are we wanting to hear? What are we wanting to feel? It was all about the feeling for me. And so what I would do is, you know, I would make, if I knew we were having a party on a Friday or Saturday, that Monday or Tuesday, we would go into the studio and we would make 2 to 3 songs. And I was like, do not tell anybody when you play these songs at the party that it's me, you know. And if people are not Shazamming, trying to figure out who it is, it's not going on the album.
Right.
If people stop dancing, it's not going on the album. And so I was always nervous before, like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. But all the songs that on the Age of Pleasure that you guys hear, we let the people who we were making them for hear them first. Without them knowing it was me, and you know, they made it.
So I'll tell you, my personal favorite is the Champagne Life. Feel like, and again, I didn't know the name of this, I just heard Champagne, but it's like, oh, you know, I was like, okay, like I wanted to hear it again. Of course, we just ran through it, but I felt the energy of the moment, and I was like, oh wow, this is just like party, what you're talking about. Just the energy. I mean, it just felt like, I'm excited about this album for you, and I'm glad that you're back and we got a wrap. But I wanted to say this one thing to you, because we didn't really get into the acting thing, but I saw Antebellum one time, and not often does this ever happen to me, but your performance in that movie and just the subject matter, and just, it kind of haunts me. And you took me to some other place that I was not expecting when I saw it. Me and my wife are watching it, and I can't get out of my head the scene of you in the car in the beginning when you're in the Uber, and it just starts this journey and just the unbelievable wickedness of what it was. Looking at that script, if I could do that as a Black person, but talk about that experience of just seeing that script and making a movie like that. A lot of people don't talk about Antebellum.
It was very tough. That was one of like the toughest movies to film. And, you know, for obvious reasons, what it was about. But, you know, it was an important way to honor my ancestors and to also bring more awareness. It was like one of those things where I felt like, you know, I owed it to my ancestors to do. And sometimes that's tough, you know, but they paved the way for me to have this level of freedom. So I was like, the least thing I can do is just bring attention to sort of where we are presently when it comes to race, when it comes to racism, when it comes to us protecting Black lives and also fighting back against white supremacy.
Well, thank you. It's been an honor to talk to you. I'm excited about your album. Can't wait to see more movies and keep bringing that creative energy and keep being free, because more people we need to see. We need more people to think like you.
I appreciate you. Thank you for your support. And it's an honor to be on your podcast. I hope something we said or I said inspires whoever is watching or listening right now. So thank you.
Thank you. Coming up on the next Backstory Podcast. Artist, producer, actor, Neo.
The first time I heard director, I was back in LA after we did it, and it comes on the radio, and I'm like, all right, cool. At this point, I had heard a song of mine on the radio before, so played it. And mind you, at this point, I'm still just a writer. You know, I'm still moving around trying to do my thing. I didn't have a name at the time. I was the dude that wrote the Mario song.
The Backstory Podcast with Kobe Kolb is an Urban One Incorporated Reach Media Pod Is Good production, hosted and executive produced by yours truly, Kobe Kolb, edited by Donkus. Follow us on Twitter at BackstoryPCC, on Instagram, Get The Backstory. For sales and corporate partnerships, Josh Romani and Michelle Marino. Digital marketing, Walter Gaynor, J.R. Smith, and Tim Hall. Thanks again for listening to the Backstory Podcast.